The following is a rebroadcast of Straight Talk About Money. The market data in this rebroadcast is not current and should not be used for any financial decisions.
Well, as I said in my opening this morning, I've got one of my favorite guests on the show today. I haven't talked to him since we interviewed him at the Money Show in Las Vegas this spring. But he is a guest that we follow, as you have heard me quote him over and over again, because he gave me the acronym TINA to explain there is no other alternative market in a previous interview, which I really, really love. I've used that many, many times. And he's a person I personally respect. He's got a great history of the markets and I think a great perspective, and puts things in English. I'm meeting up here with a group of advisors because we're at the Financial Services Institute, and I was telling them about Sam this morning, and they said, "Why do you like him so much?" I said, "Because you can understand him. You can understand what he has to say." So I'm excited to have Sam on with us this morning. I've got with me Sam Stovall. Sam is Chief Equity Strategist of S&P Capital's IQ Equity Research Department. He is the chairman of the S&P Investment Policy Committee. He wrote a great book that I recommend that you get. It's called The 7 Rules of Wall Street, which was published in early 2009. And he's also the, as well as the Standard & Poor's Guide to Sector Investing, which is unfortunately now out of print. He writes a weekly investment piece on S&P's Market Scope Advisor. Good morning, Sam.
Good morning, Mike. Thanks for the nice intro.
Hey, listen, I was so excited to have you on. I sent text out to friends of mine last night and even my staff, telling them that I wanted them to listen to the show today. So I really set you up, Sam. You're going to have to do something really, really big.
So, all right, I'll do my
best. All right. So, okay, last week, investors got what they wanted out of the Fed, because they got their magic words, the two magic words they were looking for. But the market seemed to be, they seem to be uncertain. It looks like the footing of the market is getting a little more nervous. And, of course, this morning, it looks like we're going to open up down substantially. What's going on here?
Well, I think, first off, that we're probably seeing some end-of-quarter window dressing, some companies, mutual funds,
right,
investors looking to take some profits to really make sure that they are showing a stellar third quarter, because up until September 19th, this really was what I call a bizarro period for the market. The third quarter was up strongly, and usually it's the weakest of all quarters. The May through October period was shaping up very positively, even though traditionally it's down during midterm election years. So I think basically really people are taking advantage of how strong the market has been. And so I think we have to wait to see till the beginning of October to see whether investors start to step back in.
Yeah, it seems odd to me, Sam. I mean, I know you're a true student of market history, but like last Thursday, the market was down 1.5%. And if you read the articles and the headlines on Friday, you would have thought that the market was down 50. I mean, it was like the world had come to an end. Have we gotten so spoiled that we just assume the market's going to continue to move higher?
I think it's a combination of things. Yes, complacency is something that can end up coming around and biting the average investor. When you think that nothing could go wrong, that is the time when everything will go wrong. But anytime you read something, you hear something, you see something in the financial media, you have to remind yourself that if it bleeds, it leads. And so these media types, they want to make sure that you tune back in tomorrow morning to find out if the world indeed has ended.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, what about people that are trying to get ahead of the Fed? You know, there's just every time we get to a major inflection point for the Fed to make a decision. Certainly, we've got one coming up next spring, where the argument now is is it going to be March or is it going to be June? It's almost like none of the other months matter in the first 6 months of the year, because it seems like it's when the Fed has a meeting that's followed by a press conference. What is your thought on the Fed, and what is the recommendation you would give the people that are constantly worried about trying to get ahead of the Fed move? It seems to me, for instance, that even if the Fed should raise interest rates, it doesn't seem like, you know, the rates are going to go up that much. It's almost as if people are envisioning that, raising the interest rates, suddenly they're going to see a 6% CD again. The Feds could raise the rates, and it could not could up go up, you know, quarter, half a point, and just stay there, correct?
That's right. I think when you look at the economy, it's still fairly fragile, even though it is pointing in the right direction. On Friday, we're going to be getting non-farm payrolls that are likely to exceed 200,000, certainly making the 142,000 from last month look a lot better. But I still think that the Fed is not going to be too willing to raise rates too quickly, one, because of all the massive amount of government debt out there that will have to be rolled over at higher interest rates, but also because inflation doesn't really imply that we need higher interest rates. Expectation is that we're probably going to see an average of only 1.5% headline CPI growth in the third quarter of the fourth quarter of this year. So, you know, the feeling is that inflation is still our friend, and the Fed really would, they know how to fight inflation. They don't know how to fight deflation. So they want to keep interest rates very attractive.
Right. Now, the 6 months leading up to and after the first rate hike seem to be a pretty vulnerable period for the S&P 500. Historically, what have we seen in terms of performance when something like this happens?
Well, actually, a good lead-in for an article that I wrote a couple of weeks ago called Fed Fracking, because the extraction of liquidity has typically triggered tremblers in the market. What I did was I went back to 1946, and I looked at the average price change for the S&P 500 in the 6 months and 3 months prior to the first rate increase. And the market seemed to do relatively well on average during those periods, and then stumble a bit 3 months after. But then I decided, let's take a look at it from a different perspective. Let's quantify how many declines of 5% or more started in the 6 months before the first rate increase. The reason being that, you know, maybe we have sort of a plateauing topping before we ultimately decline, which would not get captured in that fixed date analysis. And what I found was that basically more than 80% of the time, the S&P experienced some sort of a beginning of a 5%+ decline within 6 months of the first rate increase, with the average decline ending up being about 16%. So we have gone now 36 months without a decline of 10% or more, which is three times the median and twice the average. So sooner or later, we're going to have to experience a decline of 10% or more. But I think you're absolutely right. Because of the strength of the economy, because of improvement in corporate earnings, and because I don't think that the Fed is going to be pushing the yield on the 10-year note from about 2.5% up to 6% anytime soon, that a correction is a possibility, but I don't believe that a bear market is.
So you're not concerned? I mean, it concerns me that we've gone for so long. I mean, I you're a student of history, so I know you know the numbers, but I think it's been the fall of 2011 was the last time we had a significant pullback. We're well beyond the averages, aren't we, Sam?
Absolutely. I'd like to say that if you're a fan of Brooke Benton, he once sang a song called It's Just a Matter of Time, because you're right, we have gone twice the average and three times the median since the last time we had a decline of 10% or more. And if there's one guarantee on Wall Street, it is that while corrections might be delayed, they will never be repealed. So, yep, I think that we're going to experience one. I just don't know when.
That's the big question. Anyway, Sam, you'll stay on. I've got a couple more questions for you. Folks, we've got with us Sam Sovall today, Chief Strategist, S&P Capital Equity Research. Stay with us. We're having a great show. Back to you in just a moment.
The following is a rebroadcast of Straight Talk About Money. The market data in this rebroadcast is not current and should not be used for any financial decisions.
We've got with us today Sam Stovall. Sam is one of my favorite guests. He's Chief Equity Strategist of S&P Capital's Equity Research Department, and he's the chairman of the S&P Investment Policy Committee. He's author of a book called The Seven Rules of Wall Street, which I highly recommend. And he's just a smart guy. And so I'm really pleased to have him on. And Sam, you know, you and I were talking during the break, and I guess the next place I want to go is, well, first of all, let me just wrap it up with the market. Are you concerned? I mean, you gave me the acronym in the spring, there is no other alternative. And it still bothers me that there's just no other place for people to go and put their money. It seems that a lot of people are in the markets really reluctantly, like there's no place else for them to get income, so they're buying dividend stocks and they're buying preferred stocks. Is this setting us up for a big fall when this comes?
Well, I think you're bringing up a couple of points. First off, this is probably the most unloved bull market that I've ever experienced. And
absolutely.
If you were to poll 100 investors, I think that a good 80 to 90% of them would say, I don't really like this market at all. And most probably have an underexposure to equities at this point. But you're right that they are chasing yields. So I think that there are a couple of areas of the marketplace that one might want to tread very carefully. Looking at the market as a whole, from a longer-term valuations perspective, we're really trading at or slightly below long-term average PE ratios on both operating and GAAP earnings. And if you were to include inflation, basically the implication is we're trading near fair value now. And if earnings growth does come in as S&P Capital IQ consensus estimates project for the end of 2015, we could be seeing the S&P 500 approach the 2350 level using something that I like called the rule of 20, which includes earnings growth and inflation to help figure out where the market will likely be either currently or X number of months down the road.
What is your estimate for earnings for next year for the S&P?
S&P earnings are expected to be up about 11% next year to $132 and change. This year, we're expecting to see growth of about 8%. And as we head into the third quarter earnings reporting period, we're starting the period at a fairly high level at 6.7% growth expected. Similar to what we saw in the second quarter, we ended up beating that initial estimate by a good 3 percentage points, showing realized earnings in excess of 10%.
So it's been a good year thus far, and does it look like it's going to end up one? I mean, do you see any surprises out there on the horizon?
Well, I guess I don't like what I'm seeing on the stock market right now, but I think that either we have underestimated some problems in the marketplace, such as worries about deflation in Europe, worry about a slowdown in China, and then concerns about how quickly the Fed will raise rates here, or we have unanticipated events, which, quite frankly, are hard to anticipate, so I won't make a forecast on.
Okay, what about a stronger dollar? I know you've recently written an article about that, and how could a stronger dollar really affect the market and affect those corporate earnings?
Well, a stronger dollar, the article I wrote was called Dancing with the Dollar, and what I did was I looked at correlations between the dollar and different asset classes, stocks, bonds, oil, gold, and found that the strongest negative correlation is with oil and gold, and hence gold and oil have come down as the dollar has strengthened. I think a reason for the dollar's strength has been the attractiveness of our 10-year bond yield, more than twice that of what investors can find in Europe. So as a result, I still think that the dollar will likely strengthen, and that will tend to benefit large-cap stocks over small-cap stocks in the future.
Okay, well, now, what about sectors, or any particular sector that you think is better than another?
Well, we have an overweight recommendation on the technology sector right now. Interestingly enough, technology has been the best performing sector in the fourth quarter on average, going back to 1990, with an average increase of 6.6% versus the S&P 500's typical advance of about 5% in this fourth quarter. We think that because this is the what they call the budget flush quarter, if you don't spend it, you'll lose it in next year's budgeting cycle, that this group has good earnings growth prospects as well as price momentum and could do relatively well. We also think healthcare is likely to do fairly well, and it too traditionally has outperformed the S&P in the fourth quarter, even though past performance is no guarantee of future results.
Now, are you switching over to interest rates before my time is up with you? There's a lot of talk on Wall Street always about interest rates. Of course, we started the show out with that, but it seems to me a lot of the Fed governors are coming out now and trying to massage the words to let people know that they may not be raising rates as quickly as anticipated. Is there a possibility, Sam, that things are still so weak that we could go through 2015 without a raise in interest rates?
I think that's a possibility. That's not our forecast. We think that they'll probably begin a rate tightening program by the latter part, maybe at the June meeting, because they will also have a press conference, and Fed Chair Yellen will probably want to do her best to soothe the market's ruffled feathers by explaining the purpose of the first rate increase and why it's not meant to really slow the economy. But you're absolutely right. If we find that economic data, be it retail sales, GDP, industrial production, continue to be relatively weak, then we could find that the Fed sits on their hands because they would rather continue to stimulate a fairly fragile economic recovery.
Right. Now, speaking of things that have been fragile lately, gold and commodities in general have not done well for a long, long time. And you mentioned gold and oil in your comments just a few minutes ago. Is this a bad time to be investing in gold? I've heard, you know, you hear two sides of everything always. You hear a lot of people saying, hey, we've had a big sell-off in gold. It's time to buy. But I've heard a lot of smart people say that gold's going to drop another couple hundred dollars before it hits bottom.
Well, from a technical perspective, we get our technical research from I-10 Research. They recently indicated that the bias is to the downside on gold prices. Gold broke support at 1240 and is, you know, continuing to work its way lower. Their expectation is that the next support target level lies between, or I should say around 1180. And so, you know, we probably could have additional downside momentum as the dollar continues to strengthen. So the gold has two things working against it, higher dollar as well as the expectation for higher interest rates. And since gold does not pay a dividend, it actually costs you money to own.
Yeah, that's right. It's not an inexpensive asset, and it's in this world, I don't think it's a good idea to own anything that doesn't pay you a dividend. One last question. Is there anything that keeps you up at night, Sam? Anything that really makes you nervous about what you see out there in the markets right now?
Well, just the worry that this could accelerate into another sharp correction, because we are two for one, and emotionally I think investors are not prepared to handle that.
Well, there's a lot more that keeps me up at night, but I think you're right. Listen, Sam, thank you so much for being with me today. I really appreciate it. We'll look forward to having you back again. Thank you, sir.
My pleasure.
You have been listening to a rebroadcast of Straight Talk About Money. The market data in this rebroadcast is not current and should not be used for any financial decisions.